ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट नंबर 27 एंड 28 टुडे। वी हैव टेक्स्ट 27 रिटन ऑन द बोर्ड सो वील चैंट इट टुगेदर। इति एतत् पुण्यमाख्यानम् अम्बरीशस्य भूपते संकीर्तयन् अनुध्यायन् भक्तो भगवतो भवेत्। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Translation: anyone who chants this narration or even thinks of this narration about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish certainly becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Purport: Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur herein gives a very good example. When one is very eager for more and more money, he is not satisfied even when he is a millionaire or a multi-millionaire, but wants to earn more and more money by any means. The same mentality is present in a devotee. The devotee is never satisfied thinking, this is the limit of my devotional service. The more he engages in the service of the Lord, the more service he wants to give. This is the position of a devotee. Maharaj Ambarish in his family life was certainly a pure devotee, complete in every respect, because his mind and all his senses were engaged in devotional service. Savai mana krishna padara vindayor vachamsi vaikuntha gunanu varnane. Maharaj Ambarish was self-satisfied because all of his senses were engaged in devotional service. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. Nonetheless, although Maharaj Ambarish had engaged all his senses in devotional service, he left his home and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully at the lotus feet of Krishna, exactly as a mercantile man, even though complete in wealth, tries to earn more and more. This mentality of getting more and more engaged in devotional service puts one in the most exalted position. Whereas on the karma platform, the mercantile man who wants more and more money becomes increasingly bound and entangled, the devotee becomes increasingly liberated. We'll read the next verse, that is the last verse of this chapter, text number 28. Ambarishasya charitam ye shrinvanti mahatmana muktim prayanti te sarve bhaktya vishno prasadata. Translation: by the grace of the Lord, those who hear about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish, the great devotee, certainly become liberated or become devotees without delay. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Durvasa Muni's Life Spared. So we have reached the end of this chapter concerning the life and activities of Maharaj Ambarish. Very exemplary devotee, setting a very high standard for all people. The qualities that he possesses are not only desired by people in the same ashram as his, that is the Grihastha ashram, he was a king, but definitely these qualities are desired even by people in the renounced order. Such equanimity. So much steadiness. Fearlessness. faith in the protection of the Lord. He's like a reservoir of all different qualities that are sought after by so many of us. It's like a big ideal. Interestingly, the 9th canto is called liberation. Every canto represents a particular theme. The first canto is called creation. So the 9th canto is called liberation. Here is a person, you know, it's not described. Like last verse, which Radhika Vallabh Prabhu covered yesterday, describes him as the last thing that we know about Maharaj Ambarish is he no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property amongst his sons who were equally qualified. He himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudev. So, it's not clearly mentioned that he went back home. But definitely, you know, this is the conclusion of such a glorious life. And yet the canto is called liberation. So, when we talk about liberation, it does not necessarily mean there has to be an explicit verse which says that, and in this way, this particular Vaishnava, this particular personality went back home, back to Godhead. His life is an example of liberated life. Iha yasya harer dasya. All his activities, his mood, his thoughts, savai mana krishna padara vindayor. He's constantly engaged, immersed in remembrance of the Lord. And that's why his life is such a nice example of how a devotee should lead his life. Now in today's verse, as a consummation of this description, as the last crest jewel of this description is, usually we have heard, the more you discuss about the Lord, the more you remember about the Lord, janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma na iti. Krishna says, if you know me in tattva, clearly my activities and my appearance, just by knowing that, you don't take birth. So this we are all aware of. We are devotees of Lord Krishna. But in this verse, interestingly it is mentioned, even if you discuss the pastimes, the activities of a devotee like Maharaj Ambarish, you become liberated. You go back home, as it is mentioned in this verse. So this is interesting that you achieve a result by meditating on the activities of the Lord. And after studying and going through the glorious life of a super exemplary devotee, at the end you get the same result. This is interesting. If you look at the life of Maharaj Ambarish, it appears that there was some kind of punishment that he underwent. It was certainly a hard time that he underwent. First he fasts for the benefit of people. He does not do that fast for his own benefit. He gets wrongly judged, is about to be killed, and then to his shock, because he is not disturbed by all this, but to his shock, the person whom he was saved from by that Sudarshan Chakra comes back and begs forgiveness from him. Now for a devotee, an exalted person is like a worshipable person. Somebody who is senior to you is worthy of respect and worship. So he is obviously seeing Durvasa Muni as a very exalted person. He never took it seriously when Durvasa Muni developed ill feelings towards him. So when the same Durvasa Muni comes back and begs forgiveness from him, even that is like a difficult situation for a Vaishnava, is it not? Not just the physical part early when he was misjudged and he was about to be killed, but for a Vaishnava, even this is an embarrassment that a senior person comes and begs forgiveness from you. So even from a Vaishnava perspective, he underwent a hard time. But all these situations, all these different incidents in a devotee's life where apparently he's undergoing a hard time is not to be treated as a kind of a punishment, as a kind of a reaction for something wrong that he did. something not up to the mark that he did. But these situations are personally orchestrated. They are personally arranged by the Lord so that some of his glorious qualities come out. We can take note of these qualities. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord mentions that a devotee, a Vaishnava, has 26 prominent qualities. Now when we have read about other devotees in the past, we were discussing Prahlad Maharaj, we were discussing Bali Maharaj some time back. So is it that they did not have these qualities? No, they had. But the situation that they underwent brought out certain qualities out of those 26 qualities. Similarly, when Ambarish is put to a certain set of situations, which is very challenging for him, then some of his particular qualities come out. So the situation is personally arranged by the Lord so that his devotee is glorified, so that people know Maharaj Ambarish is not just one of those many kings in that particular dynasty, stands out. He's special. Yes, Prahlad Maharaj is also special, but Bali is also special. That's why both of them are mentioned. See, for you and me, if you go to a diamond shop and we are there to purchase a diamond, keeping trust on the jeweler, we will understand that yeah, all are good diamonds, all are genuine diamonds, but there will be a gradation between that. And to fully appreciate the diamond, if anybody has ever been to a jewelry shop, they put dark satin cloth behind the jewelry. Yeah, even gold jewelry, when they sell, they have a dark satin cloth, mostly dark blue or dark black. So when you put a dark background behind, then the jewelry stands out. Then you can notice all the intricate details of the jewelry. When there is a dark background behind, then you can see all the cuts and edges of a diamond, which make it valuable. But if the dark background is not there, then people like you and me will not be able to appreciate. Yes, the jeweler will be able to appreciate. Similarly, exalted devotees, when they read the character of Maharaj Ambarish, they understand how glorious he is. But for you and me, these kind of situations have to be put by the Lord so that we can understand what a valuable diamond this is. So this is what is being discussed here. How glorious is his devotee? And here we have this particular theme that the same effect you get by chanting and remembering the activities of the Lord can be got by chanting and remembering the activities of a devotee. So in the 11th canto, after Lord Krishna has narrated the story of Pururava, King Pururava, then he is talking to Uddhav and he mentions some glories of his devotees because he has just now glorified Pururava. So there are beautiful verses here. I'll just read two of these verses. And the conclusion of these verses is very nice. So he says, Annam hi prani nam prana, artanam sharanam tu aham, dharmo vittam drinam pretya, santorvag bibhyatornam. He says, just like for somebody who is hungry, food is his rescue. For somebody in distress, I am the final rescue. Who else can rescue him? For somebody who is about to undergo different miseries, he is about to go through a different difficult situation, he says, who is a better person than the devotee? So he is giving four comparisons. One is, food is essential for somebody who wants to live. I am essential for somebody who is distressed. The wealth of a person who is just about to die is not money. It is whatever dharma he has done, whatever religious activities he has done. That is his wealth when he passes. Similarly, he says, somebody who is very fearful of falling down to the lower statuses of life, for him, he says, Santa, my devotee, is the most dearmost object. And then he says, specifically glorifying this devotee now, because he has narrated three other objects. Now he's talking about the devotee. He says, Santo dishanti chakshumsi bahirarka samuttita devata bandhava santa santa atma hamevacha. He gives a very beautiful analogy. He says, my devotees are actually like the sun. But what is the difference then if they are like the sun? The sun illuminates only the external world. The sun does not penetrate your and my body. When you go to a doctor and he wants to inspect your insides, he'll ask you to open your mouth wide. He has to create some artificial lighting to inspect your insides. But he says, a devotee illuminates not only the external but also the internal also. A devotee gives you knowledge by which you can understand who you are. And he says, Arkaha, the sun, will illuminate only when it is present in front of you. At night time, when the sun is not present physically before you, you do not have benefit of the light of the sun. But if you are in contact with a devotee and you are trying to emulate him, you are trying to follow him, even when he is not physically present, he is benefiting you. You can remember his activities, you can remember his mood, serving him in Vani, not only in Vapu. And then he says, Devata Bandhava Santa, indeed, for a person, ordinary person, my devotee, my pure devotee, is a worshipable demigod. He is all the relatives that he has, because we expect help from the relatives. An ordinary person expects help from the relatives and the demigods. So actually Krishna is saying we should expect help from devotees. And the last line is like the best one. Santa Atmaham Evacha. He says, this devotee, Aham Evacha. The translation is, and ultimately they are non-different from me. Krishna himself is speaking to Uddhav, his dearmost devotee, dearmost friend, and he says, actually my devotees should be considered like me only. Some verses back we were seeing those verses, that I am always there in the heart of my devotee. So this is how dear the devotees are to Lord Krishna. And that's why in today's verse we see that Shukdev Goswami is saying, if somebody hears this narration of Ambarish Maharaj, then he gets the same result. Now, what are the qualities of a devotee which make him so worshipable or so equivalent, at least in terms of the result, to the Lord? In the purport, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave a nice analogy. He says, just like a rich man, no matter how much money he has, he's always eager for more and more money. Similarly, a devotee is always hankering for more and more service. He's always hankering mood. So this laulyam, this eagerness that a devotee has, who's always looking out for more and more service of the Lord. We know this example that Prabhupada gave to us. You keep an iron rod in fire, it becomes fire in terms of its effects. You keep an iron rod in ice, it will become ice cold. So it gets the same effect as that of ice. So it remains iron, but because it is in touch with fire, it is in touch with ice, it develops those qualities. Similarly, the more you are hankering, the more you are eager for service of the Lord, the more you are engaged in hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord, more and more you develop the same qualities, so the effect is the same. One time in Mexico, when Srila Prabhupada was there, he gave a class, and South America is culturally very different, very diverse when compared to India's culture. So after he gave a class, he was explaining about Krishna consciousness, and most of the people there, they even had a language problem. In Europe and US, at least, the main language is English, and Prabhupada could speak English. But there it's Spanish. So then somebody is translating, and there are a lot of things in between for them to understand fully Prabhupada's message. So finally, after the class, when he asked for questions, one old lady, she raised her hand and said, you were saying that if I remember Krishna at the last moments of my life, then I get free from the cycle of birth and death. I get the spiritual life. So she said, what happens if I remember you? At the last moment of my life, I remember you. So Prabhupada kept quiet for a moment and then he said, you get the same result. So is it that Prabhupada is equating himself with Krishna? No. But in terms of its effects, yes. If you remember a pure devotee and if you remember the all pure Lord, you get the same result. Tadapi sadhushu krutushu moksha dwaram apavratam. The same attachment that glides you down when applied to mundane people and mundane objects of this world, tadapi sadhushu krutushu, when you apply it to the sadhu, moksha dwaram apavratam, it opens the doors of liberation for you. So this is what we need to understand, and it is expected after reading this verse that we do not become complacent, but we develop this mood of more and more. Just like that mercantile man is described here, he's a millionaire, he already has a lot of money but he wants more. Similarly, we all might consider that we are on that path of devotional service, but there is no stopping now. There's a lot more to be achieved. The more we hanker, the more we will achieve. So I'm just discussing this because a living entity is not a dead stone that you will ask him to keep quiet now. He has his emotions, he is thinking, he feels, he wills. But this thinking, feeling and willing, when applied to ordinary people of this world, causes degradation. The same thinking, feeling and willing, when it applies to the Lord, it elevates him. One very nice example of understanding this hankering is that of Srila Narad Muni. And in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this pastime is very nicely described. In his previous life, Narad Muni was a young child, simple child, assisting his mother, not having a father even. And one time, some sages visited him, stayed with him for 4 months. He served them. He developed a taste for hearing Krishna Katha. He developed Ruchi, Mama Bhavat Ruchi. He developed attraction for the Lord. And then the sages left after some time on their way. Now a snake bit the mother. And his last support, his last shelter in this world, his mother was also not there with him now. So what does he do? Because he had heard from the sages what is needed to be done, when his shelter was taken away, he did not become morose. He did not dial a helpline. What do I do now? I am all alone. I am depressed. Please help me. Which antidepressant to take? Just imagine a 5-year-old boy alone. He does not have any relatives. He has his mother as his only shelter, and that mother is also taken away. Because he knew what is to be done, he immediately left his home. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, he did not even perform the last rites of the mother. Immediately left. It's that immediate. He knew what is to be done. He left, wandered through different forests, went through different jungles. Sometimes he passed through metropolises, cities. Sometimes he passed through mines, orchards, parks, gardens. Finally, he reaches one place. He finds a huge banyan tree there. There is a lake of water there. He takes a sip from that water, purifies himself and sits beneath that banyan tree. He says, okay, I think I should now sit down for my final task. So he sits down, closes his eyes, rapt attention, and is meditating on the Lord. Now when he does this, after some time, the Lord appears in his heart. The same Supreme Lord who is sought after by yogis. Millions of years they are performing austerity, is not able to get him. But Lord himself on his own, by his own volition, appears in Narad Muni's heart. And for a moment Narad Muni is very happy. Oh, I am seeing the Lord. Tears roll down from his cheeks. Starts crying. Now these tears are tears of extreme happiness. These tears are not tears of distress. And as this is happening, the Lord disappears from the heart and appears in front of him, outside the heart. So it's not even something to be considered an illusion. It's not that he is just imagining things. You know, with our closed eyes, sometimes we can imagine things. When we dream, we have our eyes closed and we are seeing different things. So this is not like that. The Lord appears in front of him. And it is mentioned, this form is so beautiful. It is just apt to satisfy the mind, and it vanishes all the perturbance of the mind. All the disturbances in one's mind are immediately vanished when you see the form of the Lord. And Prabhupada gives some more explanations about the form of the Lord, how throughout our lives we are searching for a beautiful form to see. And we are seeing so many beautiful forms in this world, but none of them satisfy us. And that's why we hanker for a more beautiful form, more beautiful form. But when finally you come across the beautiful form of Lord Vishnu, then there is no more hankering. So anyways, this form appears to him, he's very satisfied, all his senses become separately enlivened. His eyes are happy, his nose is happy, his ears are happy, everything is happy. And then the Lord vanishes. He disappears from his vision. Now he's almost shattered. You are searching for something, you are hankering for something, you get it, and then it is snatched away from you. If you don't have a valuable object with you, it's all right, bereft of that object. None of you, my friends in the Brahmacharya ashram here, possess a diamond. So when I'm talking of a diamond, I don't see much of glimmer on your faces. But some people who know what is a diamond, when I'm talking of a diamond, their face lights up. We don't have that connection with the diamond. But just imagine somebody who possesses a diamond, somebody who has a diamond and he loses that diamond. Oh, what will be his anguish? What kind of emotions will he undergo? So Narad Muni finally gets the Lord, he sees the Lord, and he has not captured the Lord. The Lord, being pleased by Narad Muni's devotion, has appeared in front of him, and then he vanishes. So this puts him in a terrible state. But then there is an unembodied voice. And the voice says, Avipakva kashayanam durdarshoham ku yoginam. He says, I am not visible to those who are immature in their devotional service. Now interestingly, in the next verse goes like this. Sakridya darshitam rupam etad kamayate nagha matkamas shanakai sadhu sarvan munchati hritshayan. In the next verse, the Lord is calling Narad Muni anagha. Anagha means the sinless one. So just in the previous verse, he has said that I am not visible to those, I am not manifest to those who are immature in their devotional service. But he manifested himself to Narad Muni. And to confirm that you are not a sinful person, you are not immature in devotional service, in the next verse he calls him anagha. He says, you are sinless. So then why did I vanish? I am not visible to kuyoginam. I am not visible to those who are immature. And just now I was visible to you. It means I am giving a testimony that you are not a sinful person. You are not immature in devotional service. As a 5-year-old boy, you are fully mature in devotional service. I came in front of you. Then why did I vanish? Mat kama shanakai sadhu. Just to increase your hankering for me. You already deserve me. I am already yours. I gave myself to you. But why am I vanishing? Just so that the rest of your life you develop more and more hankering for me. That is what I want from you. I do not want you to become satisfied, complacent. Oh, I achieved the vision of the Lord. Have you? No. Have you? No. See how great I am. No. I gave you my darshan just to assure you I have taken note of your intensity. I have taken note of your mood. But my dear son, please increase your hankering more and more. Don't stop here. So first, there was perfection. He saw, but he disappeared. Now he expects increased perfection. Within perfection also, he is expecting a higher standard. Yes, all of us are chanting. All of us have started on this process of being conscious of Krishna more and more. Some of us are able to do it for some time. Some of us are able to do it for more time. Some of us are able to do it all the time. Different levels. Devotees sitting in there in this room. But all of us, what we can learn is, please go ahead. Don't stop anywhere on this path. Krishna expects us to develop more and more perfection. You know, sometimes we hear about a desirable object and we just wish for it. When we come to devotional service in the early days, something that is prominent on our minds is association of somebody who inspires us. We look forward to his association. Mahaprasad is a definite yes. But as time goes by, as you understand the depths, as you understand the intricacies of devotional service, no longer are you interested only in Mahaprasadam, only in the physical association of the person who inspires you. You are also interested in slowly serving the instruction of those who's inspiring you. Now you develop other attractions also, is it not? In the early days, there are few attractions. Then you develop some more attractions. This is also important. That is also important. This is also important. That is also important. Not at the cost of the earlier attractions. You are increasing your scope of attractions. And all of them are within the realm of devotional service. So as time goes by, not only should we stay attached to what attracted us in the beginning, but we are also expected to get attracted to develop more service attitude towards other activities of devotional service also, which may not necessarily be attractive to us in the first few days. Some of us who were not very good singers, you know, maybe we never got attracted to kirtan. But as time goes by, we are expected to do that. Learn some musical instrument, do some kirtan. Somebody who does not know cooking, try your hand a few times here and there. But please increase your scope of activities. There is so much more that Krishna expects from us. So this is what I was trying to present. One analogy that Prabhupada presents in this verse is that just like a rich man never gets satiated with his wealth, similarly a spiritualist, a pure devotee says more service, more service, more service. There is a chance for us to compare these two personalities mentioned here on, you know, all grounds. I'll explain what I mean. The analogy here is only of that part that they hanker for more and more. Other qualities of the rich man do not match with the other qualities of the spiritualist. The only corresponding qualities that are worth our consideration here are these qualities that he hankers for more and more. So what is the difference? It's necessary to understand this because some of us may carry a wrong message that, oh, I need to be like a rich man who is lusty, who is greedy after more and more money. No, only this hankering part is supposed to be taken. See, a rich man, no matter how much more he accumulates, will always stay unsatisfied. Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhava mahashano mahapapma vidhi esha vairinam. Never get satisfied. Mahapapma and mahanalo. A great fire can never be doused by putting fuel. So a person who's hankering for more and more money will never get satisfied. On the other hand, a spiritualist who's hankering for more and more service, he'll never get satiated, but he's getting experience of the Lord. The Lord is absolute. Not that Krishna is present only in the spiritual world. He is present in his deity form. He is present in the Bhagavatam form. He is present in the Mahaprasad form. He is present in his holy names. As his holy names, not in his holy names. He is present as his holy names. So, when you are trying to serve him, when you are trying to chant, when you are trying to offer something to him, you experience him. For a rich man, because he's hankering for more and more, there's no positive experience that he has. It's always in a negative way. Oh, I don't have this, I need more. Oh, I don't have this, I need more. But for a devotee, he's already experiencing Krishna in a tangible way. It is mentioned Krishna is adhokshaj. Krishna is adhokshaj. Adhokshaj means he cannot be perceived by our material senses. But Narad Muni does not have a spiritual body. It is in his previous life. So Krishna presented himself. Krishna retains his spiritual identity, he retains his spiritual form, but out of his causeless mercy, presents himself in a tangible experience to this person, Narad Muni, in his previous life, who still has a material body. So, Narad Muni, his previous life, has a material body. He has not developed a spiritual body. And Krishna is fully spiritual, yet there is perception possible. So, you and me, we still have a material body. But when we chant, we get a tangible experience of Krishna's presence. Even though we cannot see the Lord. But for a rich man, that is not the case. He is feeling more and more emptiness as he wants more and more. He never gets even a small bit of experience that, oh, I have so much money and it's giving me so much enjoyment. His eyes are on something that he does not have. That is the fuel for his more and more hankering. One example to understand this is, this rich man who has a lot of money will have desires also matching his money, is it? He no longer hankers for this petty material things. Small things here and there, it does not even catch his attention. Similarly, an advanced spiritualist who knows that his life, future life, is going to be in the spiritual world, Sat, Chit and Ananda, why should he bother himself with temporary things of this world? So he does not even get bothered by engagements on a material platform. He's only hankering for more and more service to the Supreme Lord. A person who's hungry, now yesterday was Ekadashi, and most of us fasted. So next day when we are about to break the fast, in a particular time, let's say, we are all seated together, we are expecting prasadam, and then somebody comes and starts glorifying us. Oh, very nice. You did so much fasting. You are such a nice devotee. I saw you chanting in the morning. You are chanting so nicely. So all that is all right and welcome. But what about the main thing, prasadam? Because I need to break my fast. It was a lot of stress for me to fast. Not easy for me. Not natural for me. So you say, thank you so much for your taking note. But I would wish for the next step, that is prasadam. He says, yeah, it's coming. He brings a garland, garlands you. He says, thank you so much for being such a nice devotee. It's all right, but what about prasadam? Take some sandalwood pulp. Let me decorate you nicely. You have done so much, so many ashrams. Finally, it reaches a point where you say, that's all right, but now I want food. Yeah. So in a hungry state, it is food that satisfies us, not glorification, not external comforts. Now food is nourishment for the body. What is nourishment for the soul? Contact with the Lord. Holy name of the Lord. Prasadam. That is food for the soul. So similarly, just like all external comforts do not matter to a hungry person unless that comfort translates into food. Similarly, for a spiritualist, unless there is service to the Lord, which is spiritual life, which is food for the soul, no other comfortable situations matter to him. He is in a distressed condition when you give him material comforts minus devotional service. If you give him devotional service with comforts, he takes that part, saragrahi. But if you give him just material comforts minus devotional service, he does not have any chance to serve the Lord. That is like you and me getting no food and just getting words of glorification. It does not much please us. So that is the state of a devotee. And the last line was, Prabhupada says, this mentality of getting more and more engaged in devotional service puts one in the most exalted position. Whereas on the karma platform, the mercantile man who wants more and more money becomes increasingly bound and entangled. This is also another difference between the mercantile man and the pure devotee. Becomes increasingly bound and entangled, the devotee becomes increasingly liberated. So the devotee is also performing karma, is it not? You and me do activities throughout the day. And we sometimes hear of this word called naishkarma. So naishkarma means an uninformed person might think naishkarma is not activities, no activity, naishkarma. But what is the meaning? Because that is the difference. He is getting more and more entangled and a devotee is getting more and more liberated. So what is naishkarma? Naishkarma means that not on the material platform, not expecting some fruit in return, not expecting something back in return. In the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto in one purport, Prabhupada writes this beautiful line. He says, naishkarma means negation. So he says, negation of the non-essential. And negation of the non-essential does not mean negation of the essential. So when you do some activity, some physical activity, there is some essence to it if you connect it to the Lord. And if you do not connect it to the Lord, it is non-essential. It does not serve any purpose on your way back home, back to Godhead. That's why it's non-essential. You get some fruits, you get some fame, name, money probably. But from the ultimate perspective, it's non-essential. All the fruits that you will get out of mundane work will be temporary, will get exhausted in due course of time. So negation of the non-essential does not mean negation of the essential. So when we say naishkarma, which the work of a devotee already includes, it means he's engaged in very much hard work. He's engaged throughout the day in a lot of activities. He's trying to increase his remembrance of the Lord through different ways. But because it is naishkarma, he has rejected the non-essential part. He has just accepted the essential part. And so we keep on performing activities, and a mercantile man, as described here, he also keeps on performing activities. But he is getting more and more entangled, and we get more and more liberated. And that's why when we hear about the life of a devotee like Maharaj Ambarish, apparently a king, having so many duties to take care of his citizens, of his own family, but just by listening and discussing these pastimes, bhakto bhagavato bhavet, you became a devotee of the Supreme Lord, just by hearing to these pastimes. So that is the Srimad Bhagavatam's offer to us. Just come here every day, sit for this class, hear some katha, sometimes about the Lord, sometimes about the pure devotees. And what happens in due course of time? You get the ultimate goal, just by listening. And Srila Prabhupada has mercifully instituted this Srimad Bhagavatam class every morning, 8:15, in all temples. So this is our golden chance. We sit here, we hear katha, we increase our hankering. Somebody who is at 0 increases it to 10. Somebody who is at 10 increases it to 20, and so on. And in due course of time, we develop attraction for the Lord. So thank you very much for your kind attention. If somebody has any questions or comments or suggestions, then we can take a few. All right, we have a volunteer there.
Prabhuji, Hare Krishna. I have heard that there are different forms of bhakti, like Dasya Bhakti, Sakya Bhakti, Madhurya Bhakti, or Rasa. Means, so Narad Muni falls into which of the exact category? And the devotional service of Devaki Mata and Yashoda Mata. So the difference is Devaki Mata accepted Krishna as the Supreme Lord, while attachment of Yashoda Mata was mainly based on material bondages. So how to progress to Madhurya Bhakti level?
This is a big question for me. I'll not be able to answer this question. But some correction is that you mentioned Yashoda Mai was attached to Krishna on the material bondage level, something like that you said?
Means emotional part.
Right. So let's talk about a very rich, influential, powerful person in this country. You can have your choice. Think about him. For somebody on the streets, he may not know his position. No. A president of a foreign country is soon going to visit this country. Yeah? You know who he is. Now, when he comes here, and let's say he goes to some place on a social engagement, and there are some people sitting there who are totally in ignorance of who he is. Some of my friends here in the Brahmacharya Ashram might not know who I'm talking about. But when president is coming, so sometimes they see him out on the street, let's say, and they don't know who he is. They are very nicely situated, happy in reading Bhagavatam Gita. They don't know who this person is. So they are in ignorance of this person, is it not? Yeah. They don't know who he is. And probably when he walks past, they will not respect him. Probably people who are surrounding him as security guards might expect my friend to walk away. No, off. Yeah, clear the way. But he might not do that. So it appears that he does not know who this person is. Now somebody who is very intimately related to this influential person, some of his family members, let's say his son, for example. Now let's say when this person is visiting India, he does not get along his son, and then after some time his son also wants to meet his father in this country. So he also comes. And he's also walking straight. And the security guards do not know that this young boy who's coming is his son. So he also walks past by, but he also does not pay much respect to this person because he is intimately related to this person. Now it appears to our mundane vision that a person who does not know this influential person is also not giving respect to him, and the person who is intimately related as a part of his family also does not pay respect to him. So both of these are on the equal level, it appears to us. He did not give respect to this influential person, and this young boy also did not give respect to this influential person. But there is a gulf of difference. There's a lot of difference. A person who does not know this influential person does not offer respect to him because he does not know his greatness. He does not know who this person is, of which country he represents as the president. But when that young boy did not offer respect to him, he is in full knowledge about who that person is. But the level of intimacy that he enjoys with that person is so deep that expression of respect will spoil it. When a son pays respect to his father, that spoils the relation between the father and the son. There's a lot of love between the father and the son. So a son is not expected to show respect. Similarly, the Vrajvasis, and as I mentioned before, the first line of my answer was this is a high subject matter. But just for clarifying this question, the Vrajvasis are not to be compared with us. We do not understand the glory of the Lord, and that's why we sometimes fail to offer respects to the Lord. Sometimes when the curtain is closed and the aarti time is there and somebody blows a conch and then the curtain opens, sometimes some of us immediately fall down to offer obeisances and some of us don't. Some of us just keep staring at the Lord. We don't understand who He is. It is difficult for us to offer obeisances to the Lord. So if somebody in the Vraj, some of the intimate associates of Krishna, when they see Krishna for the first time, if you see them not offering their obeisances, they are not to be compared on the equal platform. They know who Krishna is, but their intimacy, their love for Krishna is so overwhelming that they don't want to cause an obstruction to that.
So
Yashoda Mai's, he wants to speak. So Yashoda Mai's love for Krishna, which appears to be on the mundane level to us, is not on the mundane level. She is deeply, intimately in love with Krishna, and Krishna is deeply, intimately in love with Yashoda Mai. But for us, that may not apply.
So like mercy of the Krishna would only help us to qualify to that level.
Very much.
Okay.
Through his devotees.
Thank you.
Because mercy of Krishna directly also is difficult to get.
Okay, service
it might
to
be too
Vaishnavas.
Much for us. So in a phased manner, in one purport in the first canto, Prabhupada mentions this. What is service? Service means service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead rendered through the agency of a bona fide spiritual master. See, let's say you are thirsty. I'll end with this. I know the class is getting longer. If somebody wants to leave, they can leave. If you are thirsty and you are searching for water, and you ask somebody, can I get some water? And he takes you to a huge dam. So this is the dam of clean, drinkable, potable water. Please drink. It's difficult for you to drink. How will you drink? It's too much for you. Is it not?
Yes.
Same dam water is available to you in your home through the tap. Is it not? The tap is not giving some another water. Dam is linked to a tank. The tank is linked to a small tank within your housing structure, building, or wherever you stay. And from that overhead tank, there comes a small pipe which comes through a tap. So this tap water is in a handleable form. You can handle that water. When you open the tap, it does not drown you. You get some water in your palm full to drink. Same water. But when you go to the dam, you cannot take it. It's too much for you. So I could compare the spiritual master to something like that. That he gives you the same mercy. He does not give his own mercy. He gives you the same mercy. But in a manner in which you can handle it. In a manner in which you can take advantage of it. Your thirst will be quenched.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.